FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome, and you are listening to the Financial Survival Network. It's May 14th, 2018. Well, chaos is prevailing throughout the Mideast and perhaps at home here as well, although it seems to have backed off a bit. Well, Russia ascendant, is their budget surplus their secret weapon? Well, it could be better than all the technological innovations yet known to man aimed at achieving a military superiority. Well, that and more. First, as always, we urge you to be part of the show. Email us, email me, kl@kerrylutz.com. In the meantime, John Rubino is with us now. John, happy Monday.
Hey, Kerry.
So what about this budget surplus in Russia? That's like a major country actually running a budget surplus. Now, the question is it doing them any good, or is it a longer term play?
Well, you know, first of all, a budget surplus for a major country is almost unheard of now. Maybe Switzerland has one. I'm not even sure about that, but they're probably just about the only country that does besides Russia if they do. And, you know, Russia's got one now because oil is up. So the revenue from their oil exports is swamping their spending and giving them a surplus, which, you know, other things being equal, is a really, really good thing because it gives you flexibility. You know, think of countries as individuals or families, because, you know, debt and cash work kind of the same way for a country as it does for you and me. You know, if you have no debt and cash in the bank, you've got flexibility. You know, the roof could leak, you can wreck your car, you can get sick, and you get through it because you've got that cash cushion and no bills to pay related to your debts. Same thing for countries. You know, Russia has flexibility now because they're running a surplus. They're either paying off their debt or building up foreign exchange reserves. And they've also been a big buyer of gold lately. Even while they were running deficits in the recent past, they were still aggressively buying gold. So, you know, presumably they'll keep buying gold and maybe step it up if they have some extra money coming in. And that's a good thing for them. You know, maybe 3-4 months ago, I badmouthed Russia's economy on your show. And one of your listeners pointed out that a lot of what I said was true 5 years ago, but not anymore. You know, about demographics and the fact that they don't really produce anything that anybody wants to buy other than oil. And, you know, it turns out that they've got a somewhat diversified economy. Mm-hmm. Their demographics aren't great, but their population has stopped shrinking. So they're not in nearly as bad a shape as I made them out to be. And now they've got a budget surplus. So yeah. Russia is, in a lot of ways, kind of an economic success story, especially related to the rest of the world, you know, because most of the other major countries are financially a catastrophe. You know, you look at our debt in the U.S., and we borrowed a ton of money over the past 30 or 40 years, but instead of, now that we're at the end of a cycle with lots of people at work, et cetera, moderating our borrowing, we're increasing our borrowing. The slope of our government debt curve is actually steepening now. So we're making an absolutely classic mistake that is not unlike what Argentina and Venezuela did to bring them to the point of absolute currency collapse here, which is to continue to borrow money year after year after year, regardless of your place in the business cycle. You know, just load up on that debt to the point where you got no flexibility left. You know, you're the opposite of a person with cash in the bank and no debt. You know, your roof leaks, or, you know, in the case of a country, if you get into a war, you have any kind of a natural disaster, you have a serious downturn in the economy, you don't have any cushion. You know, you don't have any weapons with which to fight that unforeseen problem. And, you know, that's the situation that we're heading into in the U.S. And Japan is even further along than we are. And Europe is just an absolute mess financially because their unfunded liabilities are astronomical. You know, they've been doing a pay-as-you-go system for their version of Medicare and Social Security. And now all the baby boomers are retiring. So the taxpayers are going off the taxpaying rolls and becoming retirees. And there are fewer people coming up through the workforce to pay the bills that the baby boomers are going to require in order to be retired. So, you know, everybody's looking at a financial mess. And here you've got Russia, who's doing the exact opposite. So, you know, Putin is a little bit Trump-like. You know, if you want to compliment him, you always have to qualify it by saying, yeah, he's a bad guy, but he's doing this thing right. And that's the case right now. Putin is a bad guy, but his financial policies look brilliant compared to those of most of the other big countries in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, maybe he's onto something. Look, maybe I don't know that it really benefits countries to run major surpluses, but and it probably doesn't harm them to run minor deficits. So maybe it's neutral, and maybe it's more a long run, in the long run type situation. It'll really benefit them when the rest of the world is going bankrupt. All the major countries of the world are going bankrupt. Europe, even Asia, they'll be sitting pretty and they'll be able to buy everything up. Maybe that's their plan.
Well, if the other currencies collapse because of excessive debt and Russia has used its surplus to build up a really big gold balance, then they will be, like you said, they'll be one of the rich countries because this gold that they've been saving will be orders of magnitude more valuable relative to these fiat currencies that are collapsing out there. And yeah, if they want to, they can buy up a big chunk of the rest of the world. So in that sense, you know, if you use a surplus wisely, it's an absolute good thing. And likewise, if you run a small deficit, it's not a bad thing. You know, that doesn't hurt you. That's like you know, taking out a little car loan yourself when you don't have any other debt. You can handle that car loan. It's not going to hurt you or anything. It's when you take out a mortgage, massive student loans, max out a bunch of credit cards, and take out a car loan that you're in trouble. You know, then something that happens with that car loan can hurt you. And that's what the other big countries of the world are doing, in effect.
Yeah, of course. No question. We see it all over the place. Every country is in hock. And that's not even to mention the fact that the entire Western world has promised way too much to its retirees and is in no position to make good on those promises. We're not even thinking about the budget surplus as far as that goes. That's the real budget surplus on an accrual basis. But governments only work things on a cash basis, so they never worry about what's coming in the future. And then they can pretend to be surprised by it, like when Illinois writes the last check for its pension plan. And somebody left us a message on the hotline here, which if you haven't called the hotline, you please do. It's 914-424-4142. And he said, go easy on us public pensioners. You know, we didn't do anything wrong is pretty much his take on things. And it's like, look, you're part of the system. Your union has been negotiating dishonestly, promising you the moon and the world so they could keep their offices where they don't do anything all day as union officers other than cause trouble. And you're just part of the system and you're going to be collateral damage to this whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't ever want to badmouth teachers and firefighters and police because they're by and large really good people. But mm-hmm. The system, as you said, the system they're part of is both corrupt and incompetent.
Exactly.
And it's going to come back to bite them. But it's also going to come back to bite the taxpayers in the towns in which these guys live and the people who lent money to them. You know, the muni bond market is going to suffer from this, which is going to reverberate around the country. You know, I think if your listeners want a good sense of this, they could just set up a Gmail email alert for unfunded liabilities and then Google will go out and find stories on that subject and then put it in an email to them each day. And I have that. I get it every day. I get a big list of stories on unfunded liabilities. And it's chilling. You know, I'm staring at three right now that came sequentially as part of the list that Gmail sent. And one of them is, who ruined Illinois? Many share the blame. The next one is Southern Illinois mayor says cities across the state face insolvency from pension debt. And the third says Rhode Island pension plans total $2.4 billion shortfall. That's just three in a row out of this big long list of unfunded liability stories. So it's everywhere. You know, this pension system, as it's been created and evolved over the past 30 or 40 years, is breaking down pretty much everywhere in the country. If the state isn't bankrupt, a whole bunch of cities definitely are bankrupt within a state. And in some places like Illinois and Kentucky and possibly New York and New Jersey and possibly California, the entire state is bankrupt. And when these things start falling, it's going to be shocking and surprising to a lot of people.
Hey, all of California, you know, somebody I was talking to and mentioned Yuba City. I don't know why, it was on a show or something. And there was a new mayor there who was promising to do all sorts of wonderful things. And I said, I'm sure the last one was a loser, and I'm sure that the place is practically broke, because that's what's happening around California, and they're doing absolutely nothing to address it. She got very angry and said, you don't know what you're talking about. You don't know anything about it. I said, that is true. I don't know about Yuba City in particular. Maybe their finances are stellar, but that would be probably the only city in California. And they're in Northern California. They want to, I don't know if Yuba does, but basically Northern California wants to become a separate state called Jefferson. And it's like libertarian, like they're just going to have like no government in Jefferson. Who knows if they'll even have state police. And
someplace that includes San Francisco.
No. That? Northern, the very northern section.
Oh, okay. Of it.
No. Like above, once you go above there, you get to like a very conservative area. And they've been devastated by ridiculous controls on logging. It used to be a major logging area. All of these things, you know, this particular area doesn't particularly want to grow marijuana for profit. And it's just all over the place there. California is a basket case. And the next downward turn, which inevitably will occur, it's going to take down a lot of places, John. California, Illinois, probably New York, probably New Jersey, Connecticut. Connecticut's in bad shape already. Massachusetts, Rhode Island will just collapse. You can pretty much pick out the major ones. They'll all have to reform to some extent, but the really bad states, the highest tax states, are the ones that are really going to take the hit. And you saw the article, John, about 800,000 people getting ready to uproot and leave New York State and California due to the new tax bill?
Yeah, that was a brutal change in taxation this time around. And you know, it's possible that that was the thing that the Republicans wanted in this tax bill, and everything else was just window dressing for them to get this change in state-level taxation.
You really think so?
Well, I think they're loving this because previously, the federal government and taxpayers in low-tax states have been subsidizing taxpayers in high-tax states because you could write off your New York state taxes, right, on your federal income taxes?
Yeah, correct.
And now you can't do that anymore. So all of a sudden, it got way more expensive to live in New York State.
Yeah, isn't that funny how that worked? Amazing how that worked. Oh, in New York State, in New Jersey, in all of these places, right?
All of which are Democrat-leaning states. I think there was an element of retribution for the Republicans in this tax bill.
In fairness, John. Okay, fairness, the high-tax states were just able to keep passing on the cost of them doing business to taxpayers in lower tax states and taxpayers that had no income tax, like here in Florida, right? So it wasn't really fair, was it?
It wasn't fair. And I don't think you should be able to write off your state taxes on your federal income tax form. That I agree. But when someone passes a law like that, you got to look at who benefits from it. And clearly the Republicans benefited from this because they hurt their political rivals. So, it was definitely something they enjoyed doing, I'm sure.
Was really the intent, though? Is that really the intent? Because, look, the Democrats who represent most of those high-tax states, they're part of the resistance, and they just said, we're not going to negotiate the tax bill. All right, because I believe fully that they could have gotten that higher, probably a 20 to 25,000 per year state and local tax deduction, but they refused to negotiate. So you can't just say it was the Republicans taking advantage and doing in the blue states. They did themselves in.
Well, no, Kerry, I'm not saying that it was wrong for the Republicans to do that. I'm saying they enjoyed doing it.
but it didn't have to be that way is my point.
But they're glad it happened that way.
Yeah, well, you know what? Are. But the Democrats are responsible for it. Yeah. Look, tax bills are all about bringing back goodies to your constituents. And the idea that a major political party refuses to engage in a tax bill in negotiations that is inevitable, that is going to happen, is purely self-destructive and madness, political madness. I mean, politics and madness kind of go hand in hand anyway, but for them to not negotiate and try to get something out of the bill for their constituents, their companies, it's madness.
And well, I think part of the calculation for the Democrats was that they saw this tax bill as something they could run against if it was not bipartisan, because, you know, it was just this big handout for rich people, or you could paint it that way.
Yeah,
and they figured they'd be able to successfully portray it as, you know, yet more money for the 1% at the expense of the 99% in the next round of elections. We don't know, that's not true yet, but it looks like it hasn't really become the issue that the Democrats thought it was going to be.
I think it's a net plus for the Republicans.
Yeah.
I think the benefits of it, besides the deficit, which, look, besides you and me and a handful of people, what's a deficit? Who cares?
Yeah.
We can't be bothered. We have important things. Like, you know, like paying off for our sponsors, you know, so we have to do this. And the Democrats, it's total self-delusion. And, you know, it's crazy, John. How could they think that? That's just totally stupid. I mean, you don't need to be you don't need to be a political genius to figure out that when a lot of people are getting stuff back, rightly or wrongly, whether it's good for the economy and the country or not, it's going to have a net positive, and you can't really stand in the way of it. It's going to steamroll you over, right?
Yeah, tax cuts are always an easy sell.
Yeah.
As we found out from Reagan on up to the present, you know, it's very easy to do that because you're giving money to people. You know, that's the Republican equivalent of the Democrats printing money via
you're giving
the
Federal welfare.
Reserve, you know, yeah. Either way, you're just handing money to people, and that's great. That feels really good if you're a politician. But you know, Kerry, starting with this, the change in taxation at the state and local level. Another important thing is happening that's brutally bad for pensions at the Supreme Court. There's a case before the Supreme Court now in which the question is whether unions, especially public sector unions, are able to force all the workers to pay union dues, which then the unions use for political lobbying. And it looks like the Supreme Court is going to say no.
They're going to say no. There's no question about it. That's what's called the mandatory dues checkoff, which means that just like any other deduction mandated by law, like Social Security, FICA, as they call it, disability, state withholding income taxes, federal, all that stuff. Just like that, the unions were able to force in many states, not in states with right to work, but in many states, they're able to pull that off. And, you know, it's, when you think about it, it's really a violation of freedom of assembly and all of the stuff that we supposedly care about in this country. And man, you know, if they aren't able to do it, when they lose it, I should say, it's almost certain they're going to lose it. They would have lost it had not Scalia passed on when he did.
Very suspiciously.
Too. Yeah, well, we don't need to get our tinfoil hats out quite about that. It's irrelevant because it worked out a little differently than they were expecting, and they're screwed. And the unions, you look what happened in Wisconsin, other states that have passed right-to-work legislation, the union membership goes way, way down, because it's like, then you have to say, oh, well, I got a bill from the union, I think I'll pay it, right? And, you know, it's just like, life doesn't work that way. It just doesn't. So It's kind of entertaining to watch this thing and to see how it's going, because this is a big case. The case have a lot of effects. Hey, I know we wanted to talk more about the Middle East. Maybe we'll wait a week and see. As you know, the U.S. has moved its embassy officially to Jerusalem. It opened today, led to a whole bunch of violence by the so-called Palestinian people, whether you believe they exist or not. That's open to debate. But in any event, John, things are a mess, and Iraq is a mess, Libya is a mess, and I probably could name 20 other countries, or probably you could, that I never even heard of, that are also a mess, right?
Yeah, starting here and, you know, working our way around the world, everything's a mess. I'm sure we'll be able to talk about that next week, Gary, because I don't think it's going away.
Yeah, and the story will be more gelled, you know, more obvious, whatever it's going to be. And then, hey, you know, Middle East has always been a mess. We all know that. Nothing is ever probably going to change it. And, well, we're on our way to whatever we're on our way to. Anyways, make sure you go check out John's site, which is dollarcollapse.com. Like ours, John has a free newsletter. Sign up for both, by all means. They're enlightening, and John is constantly producing articles throughout the week. And while you're at it, the Twitter feed's at Kerry Lutz. The Facebook page is Financial Survival Network. John, we will catch up with you next week.
Great. Thanks, Gary.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.